Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you live, straight from the whipping up a poetic fusion of life, love, laughter, inspiration, motivation, education, and mental stimulation. With a cherry on top, with our weekly hot topics on everyday relations, welcome to Poetic Energy Blog Talk Radio. With your host, Poetic Energy herself, bringing the electric current with her own poetic flow, weekly featured guests, and open mic segments. She promises to keep the current and the waves live at all times. Here on Poetic Energy Blog Talk Radio. Poetic Energy Blog Talk Radio. The number to chime in and express yourself is 917-932-8881. That's 917-932-8881. Non-U.S. listeners, dial 1-877-218-1183. That's 1-877-218-1183.
Shalom, shalom. What's going on out there, man? Shabbat shalom. You already know, each and every week it's going down on the Poetic Energy Network station. I'm Yahuwah Sai, and we're on the way. Man, you already know, we got a great show lined up for you, exclusive show about the Temple Mount. I'm really excited about this information. But yeah, I hope you're having a great Sabbath and just enjoying the rest in Yahuwah, and just rejoicing in the day that he has made. So I really want to do something different. And let's open up a song with the Tehillim. And here we go. Tehillim 100. Raise a shout for Yahuwah. All you are, serve Yahuwah with gladness. Come before his presence with singing. Know that Yahuwah, he is Elohim. He has made us, and we are not ourselves. His people and the sheep of his pasture. Enter his gates with thanksgiving, into his courts with praise. Give thanks to him, bless his name, for Yahuwah is good, his loving commitment is everlasting, and his truth to all generations. Father Yahuwah, great and awesome in esteem and set apart as your name, Father. We thank you for the Elohim of Abraham, Isaac, and Yaakov. Father, and you will send Yahushua the Messiah to reign upon the throne of Dawid forever and ever. And we just esteem you and we love you. We thank you for another day. We pray that you would speak through us and to us, that we would decrease, that the Ruach HaKodesh would increase in us, and show us the spiritual atmosphere, that we may know the signs of the times and be aware of what's going on in this modern day and age, and that we may be prepared, and we pray that we will be worthy enough to escape the things that are coming upon this world. We pray all these things in Yahushua, the Messiah's name. Hallelujah, so be it. Amen. So, here we go. You know, we got a lot of things going on. One of the things that, you know, been going over the week, of course, you had the debates between the two candidates, Obama and Romney. And you know, we had different views to that, you know. Because, hey, you know, we already know that the private banking system pretty much runs politics. So, you know, these people are basically kind of like mediators and, you know, keep people kind of alluding to the fact that what's really going on in the world. Because, I mean, if you pay attention to these different politics and different things going on, it will have you thinking that. It would almost have you thinking that some of the things in the scriptures won't transpire because, you know, they rah-rah saying, oh, you know, we can do it better and, you know, we can save the world and, you know, they can the economy will be better and all. But the reality of the situation is that, you know, America and all these other different nations that will go down and according to the revelations and different things like that. So, you know, that's what's going on, and that's what's keeping the world's attention right now, the going back and forth with, you know, the two candidates. And, you know, so, you know, we'll see how that plays out. But, you know, that's I think that's, you know, a big illusion and a part of the Illuminati to get people to disfocus on the real issues. But one of the issues that are going on right now, of course, you had the Occupy movement that's, you know, started. You remember it started over across seas, really, and it kind of migrated over here. Then it fizzled out, and that was last, you know, that was last October, I believe. Fizzled out, and I believe it was, I think it was October 15th. They had the website, and we found out that actually the people that started it was Lucis Trust, which used to be you know, the name that they call for the adversary. It used to be Lucifer Trust until they changed it, which was the marketing brain for the UN. And this is a real company. You can look it up. And it's a real company that does all their publications. And this company was basically started by in conjunction with Madame Blinsky, who was very, very evil lady, and she believed in the ascended masters like Maitreya and all these people. And this is the brain of the United Nations. And they actually have and Bill Cooper, who wrote Behold the Pale Horse, you know, he talks about the UN room and how it's geared toward that whole New Age doctrine in which they push with, you know, Lucis Trust and also, you know, the Maitreya and the Fallen Master. But here is something that has been on the rise, because last week we talked about it, we touched on it a little bit, and we talked about, because they had this speech at the UN, they had a speech at the United Nations where you had the president of Iran, Ahmadinejad, get up there, speak, and you had Benjamin Netanyahu, you had President Obama, all these people getting up and speak. And we talked about Ahmadinejad's speech in which, you know, one of the biggest speeches that he has given in a while, in which, you know, like I said, his office is up in 2013, June 2013, I believe. He gave one of the speeches, and he touched on it before. Some of the times at the UN, he touched on it before, but he really went into depth about the Mahdi, which we talked about last week, is so-called the, 12th, one of the 12 prophets or something like that of Islam, in which, you know, according to Islamic, you know, prophecy, which is not true prophecy, but according to their books and their scriptures and, you know, and Muhammad and all these people, that they believe that this person is supposed to, number one, wipe Israel off the map, and they're talking about, you know, the secular state of Israel off the map, and basically bring in, you know, world peace, and that's what one of his speeches was. He was trying to go, you know, talking about this person that would be accompanied with JC, who would, you know, bring in and usher in these things. So this is wild how these things, you know, Yahuwah is building week upon week about the things that are transpiring. So that is one. That's kind of the overview of what we, you know, talked about last week with Mahdi. And he, you know, his speech basically going into detail about this person who was coming and all these things. So it's very interesting because you can begin to put the puzzle pieces together. A lot of the nations across the Middle East, you know, the Arab nations in the Middle East, a lot of them are Muslim-based, okay? Now, one of the reasons that is a possibility of them rising up and, you know, you have Libya and Egypt and just Syria, you know, what's been going on in Syria, and Turkey, all these different nations with, the Arabs spread out and the Muslim population spread out. You begin to see something, the puzzle pieces begin to come together. Now, if you understand the doctrine of the Muslims, you understand what they do and what's their motivation. Now, Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, who is a Muslim, the reason why all his speeches are, you know, he's going to wipe Israel off the map. You know, he wanted to destroy the Zionists and the Western civilization. And they have a sense of they're still misguided, but they have a sense of what, you know, that the Jews are, you know, perpetrators and everything like that. So, but one of their things, their doctrine is based upon, like I said, the Mahdi and the Muhammad doctrines, in which, you know, this their so-called Messiah is supposed to wipe Israel off the map. So that's why they keep saying, "Hey, something going down. We're gonna bomb y'all. We're gonna do something. We're gonna try to map." That's why Ademajad gets up there and speeches that, because they have basically made a covenant in their religion to the Mahdi to perpetrate his agenda on the world. So now you see the vision is becoming clearer now. So now you understand why in the Middle East all these different uprisings are happening by Arab nations, you know, with the video that, you know, they say it was the video that sparked a lot of more, you know, a lot more things, you know, with the uprising. But, you know, it's millions of videos on YouTube, and you're saying one video, you know, sparked, that's a whole nother conversation. So these things are beginning to turn the wheels because, number one, they believe, they've been quoted in believing that they are ushering in the time for Israel to be wiped off the map, and the Mahdi, which is their Messiah, to come on the stage. Now, this is some information I came across today, which makes more sense. Since last year with the Occupy, since the Libya thing, since these Arab nations over there have been rising up. And you had a lot of movements, people all trying to overthrow the government. There has been a symbol that has been very prominent in the Middle East and in Africa and over the bodies Middle East. It has been a black flag. It has been in schools. It has been in different areas of government. It has been seen in different protests. And it's been an unusual uprising of a black flag, a regular black flag, just like you have the, United States flag. There's been, you know, an uprising of a black flag that's been waving. And so I found out today the meaning behind this, because over this past year and a half, they've really been pushing this agenda. So has Ademajad. And so you got to watch Iran, because they're, it's more than just, you know, political war. It starts in the spirit first. So their whole agenda, Ademajad's agenda, the Muslims' agenda right now is to, number one, they want to start conversation with Israel. This is what their doctrine says. This is what their doctrine says, that they want to start conversation with Israel to start World War III, to usher in the Mahdi, their Messiah. This is what this is their purpose. This is why, you know, they do different things to start. That's why the uprising. But back to the black flag thing. Now, the black flag, history and tradition tells you, far as when it goes to the Muslim culture, that a black flag, once they start, you know, doing the black flag, and which I said has been it has been increasing over the past year with the uprising. Because you remember, it wasn't that much going on over there. You had different things, you know, of course, the regular nonsense that goes over there all the time with the uprising. But like I said, over this past year, when we started to come across the Gregorian calendar year 2012 and the Occupy movement last year, the whole thing with Libya and all that, that you had this big uprising of a black flag being seen in all these Arab, all these Muslim believing nations. So what is up with that? Over, you know, an increase in over past years. Okay, the black flag is known as the Ar-Rahim. Okay, now what does this mean? Okay, the Ar-Rahim. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Now, we're not going to get too much into the etymology of that word, you know, of what that means, and, you know, and all these things. But the increase of the black flag, according to their history and tradition and scholars and different things which has been written on this, is their symbol of their Messiah, the Mahdi. So, and you know, Muhammad has been quoted in saying this. A lot of Arab nations have been quoting saying this. And this is why you know, this is why you know that these things are all connected, that the Illuminati is pushing forth the New Age agenda in order to bring in the what Revelations talk about, the false prophet and the anti-Messiah. Because we talked about how the Occupy movement was October 15th, which was, I believe it was the website they had created, which was created out of New York, at a location where Lucy's Trust has does business. So you're saying that the Occupy movement was created by basically the Illuminati, getting American people to believe, oh, the 99% and this 1% thing, and going against the system, when in fact they're falling into the same trap that they want them to fall into. So this is not. I mean, this is the case in America, but this is not also the case in America. This is the case also in Africa, Libya, Syria, all where these uprisings are happening, all across the Middle East, is the same thing has been happening. Is that the global elite has been pushing forth their agenda to get these things going. So this is that. I mean, that just struck me. That information just struck me, because since the whole thing with the Middle East and Libya and all these things, the uprising and the protests, we've seen it on TV, the protests of the mass people. And if you go back and you look and you check about this thing about the black flag, this thing is pushing their agenda to usher in the Mahdi coming. Okay? Now, this gets very interesting, because it seems like every false religion out there is really starting to push forth the coming of the so-called Messiah. Now, not only the Muslims. Now we're gonna go to the next step, because there's three biggest religions out there, which we all know: Muslims, Christian, and Jews. Okay, we're not part of the walkers of the way, Nazarene. We're not part of none of those religions. But those three major religions are all now pushing forth agendas to usher in their Messiah. Now this gets interesting. This gets very interesting. Because now, we just talked about this story. We just talked about, the black flag has been, over the last year and a half, it's been increasing. It's been seen in, schools. They've been flying it on flagpoles. I mean, they're really trying to, and that symbol is a symbol for them to usher in. So that's why you see, it starts in the spirit, and it's a spiritual heightening, getting to the point where the stage is set, and that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to actually physically set the stage. That's what you have to understand. They're not, they feel like they can fulfill prophecy. Okay, so now we're gonna go to another story. Like I said, you got the Muslims, you got three biggest religions, you got the Muslims, the Jews, and the Christians. Now we're going to go to the Jews, okay, the Ashkenazi Jews, which probably about 90% are Ashkenazi, and we talked about the Ashkenazi, we know about that, even going back to Bereshit, Genesis, and learning about the bloodline. I mean, Genesis 10 basically disrupts and disorganizes any thought to believe that the Jews that are in which was created the secular state of Israel are truly the children of Yisrael. This one chapter destroys any of their doctrine, and we can go over it just very quickly. It says, and this is the genealogy of the sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japhet, the sons born to them after the flood. The sons of Japhet: Gomer, Magog, Medi, Yamin, Tabul, Misket, and Tarsus. The sons of Gomer: Ashkenaz, and Rephin, and Tagum. Okay, right there. the sons of Gomer, Ashkenaz, right there. And if you do a little research and do a little, you know, pretty much, I believe, don't quote me, but I believe about 90% of people that, you know, proclaim themselves as Jews are from the Ashkenazi descent, you know, coming from the kingdom of Caesarea, almost 90%. So, and they say they are the sons of Elohim. However, like I said, this one chapter can destroy their whole doctrine. So if, you know, anybody coming old, you know, if any Jewish person, you know, tries to challenge this, I mean, you can go right to this. Now, stay in chapter 10 and go down to verse 21. And it says, and also to Shem, the father of all children of Ebri. And the brother of Yephet, the elder of the children of born. Now, Ebri is the root word of where you got the word Hebrew. So that's where the Ebri was like the root word where they got the word Hebrew. And that's where they combined, because if you look at the genealogy, Abraham was one of the descendants of Ebri. Okay? Now, it says, verse 25, it says, and to Ebri born two sons, the name Pegag, and his days on earth were divided, and his brother's name was Yeth. And it got brought forth Elamadad and Shemad and Hathasimeth and Yara and Hasdam, Yuzal, Dakal. So we're gonna skip these names, and these names are very hard to pronounce. But verse 31, and it says, and these are the sons of Shem according to their clans, according to their languages, according to their lands, according to their nations. These were the clans of Noah to all generations. And so basically, if you do if you do a little genealogy and go to chapter 11, and it says, go to chapter 11, verse 16, it says, Ebri lived 34 years and brought forth Peleg. And then you keep going down, and it gets to and verse 26, it says, Teru lived 70 years and brought forth Abram. Okay? And then you just keep going down, and Abram, which was short for Abraham. So basically, Abraham descended from Shem. Okay, and Abraham, which we know is the father of Yisrael, the father of the Hebrew Israelites, the descendants of the Hebrew Israelites. So he is really the father. So basically, out of the sons that Noah had, Shem, all descendants that fall from under Shem are the descendants of the children of Yisrael. So, I mean, that's just a little background right there. So if you get into, you know, and that's one thing right there. So we can never be fooled. We can never be fooled by carbon testing or any of these things. The facts speak for itself. The scriptures speak for itself in Bereshit, Genesis 10, and chapter 11, that the Ashkenazi Jews. But that's what we want to get into. We want to establish that fact that they are the synagogue of Hashatan, the adversary, because right there it says it, because he said, I know them who will say they are Yahudim, but are not, but lie, for they are the synagogue of Satan. And so this is what they do. They lie. You go to one chapter, and it shows you right there. You go to one chapter, and it shows you that they lie. Okay. Now, I mean, that should be a given. But now, what's going on? We just talked about the Muslims. We just talked about their push forth with the black flag and all these things to push forth their agenda to usher in the Mahdi. Okay, now, we all know that the most Ashkenazi Jews and the Orthodox Jews and the ultra-Orthodox Jews and whatever sect you want to get into, that a lot of them feel that the Messiah that came, Yahushua, the Messiah that came, they believe that he did not fulfill the prophecies in order for him to be, you know, the Messiah. So they actually believe that they're kind of like 2,000 years behind, and they still believe that the Messiah is coming upon his first, like one of his first missions to basically, you know, do things. And so they feel, you know, propelled to do certain things. Now, Rabbi Yehuda Glick is one of the former heads of the Temple Institute, says that the priestly garments are already ready. Charn Richmond, legal authority on the Red Heifer, says that the Temple Mount will be built on, the temple will be built on the Temple Mount. Rabbi Yoel Cohen says that the Jewish people will follow the pattern in Ezekiel 40 through 46 in order to build the temple, and that the priests have already been chained. I was really looking at a couple rabbi excerpts, and they were saying that, hey, you know, a temple is not going to fall from heaven or nothing like that, you know, as a lot of people think. And they actually think that they can create. What their actually mindset is, they believe they can create, you know, what Revelations, you know, Revelations talk about. Because the temple in Ezekiel and the temple in Revelations are kind of, are somewhat similar. So, you know, they really believe that they can create New Jerusalem on earth. And so they believe when the Messiah comes that he will not destroy them, but somehow offer, you know, peace, and he's coming to, I don't know, you know, pass out hugs and lollipops. I don't know. But this is what somewhat they believe. They also believe that they actually created the 10 stringed harps, which was played in the time of King David, which is mentioned in 1 Chronicles 23 and 5. So this is what, you know, their belief system has been, and we you know, of course, we grew up, and maybe in Christianity you heard a little bit about the, you know, the third temple and all these different things. And so you might have heard about, you know, different things about, you know, them trying to build it, you know, just passed for one of the first times in a long time in the past Passover in the spring that they, the so-called, you know, priests and all these things, that they created a reenactment of how it would be to slaughter, you know, slaughter a lamb like the Pesach on the day of the Pesach, and how the ritual would go, how they would go through it, and a lot of things. And during the ceremonies and different things like that, is that they were chanting, you know, next time it will be, you know, at the temple, at the, you know, the holy, the, what they said, the holy temple. Okay. So, and they also stated that the Temple Institute stated, one of their quotes, that, you know, the reenactment and the slaughter, because they actually did slaughter the lamb and everything, but it cannot be official without an altar at the same place as King Solomon's temple and King Herod's temple, which is on the Temple Mount. So it can't be official. So the they were doing the reenactment, but it can't be officially according to the, you know, Torah, without it being on the altar. Without being on the altar and where at that place, which is somewhat true. Okay. So, but this is the thing. This is the thing, and this is the wig puller right here. Man, this starts to get deep. This starts to get deep. So if you got your notes, this starts to get, you know, deep. Because yeah, I mean, that's what we generally, even in the truth, that's what we generally have learned about, you know, about the situation of Temple. But we got to study history to order and to understand what the situation is and how the situation will unfold in the future according to the scriptures. Now, you got your scriptures. Go to Daniel. So if you go to Daniel chapter 9, verse 27, Daniel chapter 9, verse 27, it says, and he shall confirm a covenant with many for 1 week. So we're going to stop there. He shall confirm a covenant with many for 1 week. So we're not going to go back into too much, you know, dissect this whole, you know, chapter, but we're going to start right there. And it talks about we'll just give you a brief synopsis. It talks about the 70 weeks of Daniel, which is, it talks about the 70 weeks of Daniel, which is basically bracketed into 7 weeks, times seven. So it's actually times 70, so it's actually 400. It's a prophecy for 490 years. And according to, after the Messiah was cut off, 483 years of this prophecy has been fulfilled, so there's 7 years left of this prophecy. So it says, and he shall confirm a covenant with many for 1 week, so that 1 week is 7 years, which, you know, is similar to the same time which revelations will be accomplished, you know, with the seven seals, you know, 7 years. Okay, so he shall confirm a covenant with many. So the he is not Yahushua the Messiah. He is somewhat either the anti-Messiah. Now, this is where it gets very interesting, going into history and start studying history. Now, when you start to study history, I just found this out this morning. Now, the Jews really don't like the Pope too much. Okay, this is the situation. We're just going to give you the situation. A couple years ago, what happened is the Jews were actually going to sue, I think they tried to put a lawsuit. I don't know what happened. I think the lawsuit got dropped or whatever. But they actually put a lawsuit on the Pope because they were saying that when Jerusalem had got sacked by Titus, that Titus plundered the temple and took all of the precious things in the temple and took it back to Rome. Okay, because you remember that. They came from Rome as the Romans, and they came from Rome and they sacked, destroyed the temple, and they took the precious things like the menorah and different precious instruments that were in the Herod temple, which were the things that, you know, Yahuwah had stated, because this is 70 A.D. This was 40 years after Yahushua had been impaled, resurrected, and ascended to the Father. This was 40 years after. So what they're saying, that they put a lawsuit on the Pope because they're saying that the Vatican, number one, has books that detail all these things, and they're somehow hiding the precious things like the menorah and the things that were sacked from the temple in 70 A.D. and were brought back to Rome. So this is the unspoken beef between the Pope and the Jews. So it is a little, not confrontation, but a little bit of friction between the two groups, between the Jews and the Pope. So, but I don't know what happened to the lawsuit, but it was one of the things that, and these were prominent rabbis in Judaism who made this claim and who made this lawsuit against them. And that's, I think that's one of the biggest things, because, you know, I believe they know a little bit about Christianity, and that's why and the Pope is pretty much the biggest person over Christianity. And a lot of Jews do not, you know, to this current moment, you know, accept the beliefs of Christianity, because, you know, even though, you know, Christianity is very far off, even far the name of the Messiah, you know, but they believe, you know, they have the core belief that, you know, JC was the Messiah walking the earth and fulfilled the prophecies and different things, and the Jews feel otherwise, and the Pope is the leader of the, basically like the Christians. So and they believe that they're tied to the Romans. So there's a little bit of contention in there that you know will you know sparks different things. And all three of these religions got some kind of doctrinal belief in which causes them to have some kind of confrontation against these different religions. So this is the matter of this and the truth of the situation. But back to Daniel 9:27. Now it says, and he shall confirm a covenant with many for 1 week, 7 years. Now, this gets interesting, man, because I looked into this. We talked about this a while back on the way, on the Poetic Energy Network station. We talked about this a while back that the true covenant, well, not this covenant right here in Daniel 9:27, but the true covenant that Yahuwah made with Yisrael was what he told Abraham. Remember what he told Abraham in Bereshit, Genesis, that from, you know, from the land of great Euphrates to here, you know, you would have this land, this would all be yours, you know, into your seed, you know. So Yisrael will possess that land and will be, you know, many of the sands of the sea. I mean, you know the prophecy. And that was, you know, that was the covenant that he made with Abraham, you know. And it gets more complex than that too. However, this, and we talked about this, how this covenant that he, being possibly the anti-Messiah, which possibly could be, you know, what people, one of the best candidates right now is, you know, Maitreya, he will confirm a covenant with many for 1 week. Now, this gets very interesting because I don't know if you like looking into things like this, but it gets very interesting understanding the temperature, because that's what, you remember Yahusha came and he said, y'all know that, you know, you see a storm coming and you know that, you know, you see clouds coming, you know a storm coming. You know, how is it you're not able to basically understand the times? You know, and they missed the time of their visitation because they didn't understand history. If they understand history, they would know Daniel prophesied the very moment he would come in and he would be there. But they didn't understand history, they didn't understand prophecy. But when we look at this, and this is something I didn't know. I was like, man, this is very powerful that Yahuwah, you know, revealed this to us. There was a law, number one, because you remember, this is the state of the Temple Mount right here, okay? Before we get back to Daniel 9:27, you remember, okay, they came 70 A.D., they came and they destroyed the temple, okay? A lot of Jews make claims that the Vatican has precious instruments. Oh, yeah, and I forgot to say, too, that a lot of those precious instruments that the Vatican, that the Jews accused the Vatican of having, like the menorah and different things, they have recreated and will saying they're going to put it in the third temple because they can't get it from the Vatican, okay? So that's why they recreated it. And probably going to recreate the Ark and all that stuff because they say the Vatican has it and they know where it's at. They have books and all that stuff. And that's why I tried to do a lawsuit against the Pope. Okay? So, but anyway, what happened is 70 AD, the temple gets destroyed. The Romans come and destroy the temple. Okay? So years later, the Muslims come in and conquer Jerusalem. Okay? And they, you know, and then the Dome of the Rock is constructed basically, you know, around the place of where the Temple Mount is, okay? Now, this is you got to understand, because we assume the situation, we assume the Temple Mount situation, but we don't really know, okay? Now, there is a law called the Law for the Protection of the Holy Sites, okay? This is administration of what they call over there the High Court Justice, okay? Now, Israel's Foreign Ministry of Foreign Affairs have wrote this law, and this law was basically, it was already constructed, but it was instituted in 1967, okay? Now, you remember 1948, and a little bit before that, the Ashkenazi Jews who never lived, never was their land, because we just talked about how the Ashkenaz was never children of Yisrael. They were never deport out of Yisrael because they always lived in the kingdom of Khazaria. Some almost 1,000 miles away. But 1948, they come back to what they created, the land of Israel. Okay, now couple years later, and the Dome of the Rock was already there. The Dome of the Rock had, you know, of course, the Dome of the Rock was already there. Okay, now, 1967, Israel Ministry of Foreign Affairs, they created a law. 1967, it was called the Protection of the Holy Sites, I mean, the Holy Places Law, which was created in 1967. Now, the Dome of the Rock had already been there from the Muslims when they came and conquered Jerusalem years later, okay? Now, because basically it was the Romans conquered it, and then, the Muslims conquered it, okay? And what this law entails is that you cannot violate the freedom of different religions. Because the state of Israel now, Jerusalem, is, you know, you have the Judaism, Jews, and you have the Christians and the Muslims. Okay, now it says you cannot violate the freedom or of different religions. Whoever does violate anything of the you cannot violate the freedoms of access around the places of the scar of that are considered scarred, or can you basically create harsh feelings can even be hurt, they said, and this is in the law, and this was this law, you can look it up on the governing website of the Israel Ministries of Foreign Affairs. So you cannot hurt the feelings or mess with the, you know, access of sites that are considered scarred, or you can be the penalty is be in prison 5 to 7 years. That's the penalty. But this is a law that was created and instituted in 1967. Now, the ministers of religious affairs is the people who enact this law and pushes this law from 1967 on to the Temple Mount. So now, if you understand the what's going on in Temple Mount, you understand what the Jews did. Because the Jews, the reason why they did their little reenactment, everything outside of the Temple Mount, is because according to this law, they are not able to, number one, they're not even able to pray on the Temple Mount because the Dome of the Rock is there and it's basically controlled by the Muslims. So the minister of religious affairs, they have not allowed the Jews to pray up there on the Temple Mount because they say, you know, it's going to hurt the feelings, according to this law, it's going to hurt the feelings of different religions, which the Muslims is up there. So you're going to hurt the feelings, you're going to create hostility, you know, you're going to create a war, you know, so you cannot pray. So they don't allow, you know, them to pray up there, let alone worship. So they're not able to worship on the Temple Mount. This is the reason why the Jews, of course we know, They don't have right to the land anyway. But this is why they have not let the Jews pray or worship on the Temple Mount. So this is the barrier between them. Even, you know, a lot of people saying, you know, they're gonna build a Temple Mount, they're gonna build a Temple Mount. But this is the barrier from them not even for this with this law, they cannot even build the Temple Mount because of this law. This law created by Israel Ministry of Foreign Affairs. So with this law, they can't even pray up there. They can't even go up there and worship. They can't do no sacrifices. They can't construct anything. They can't do anything. The state of how the Temple Mount is has to stay that way according to this law, because number one, if they go up there and start praying, they're gonna get arrested. Matter of fact, the guy that runs the Temple Mount, which I'm gonna get into, is Yisrael Ariel. He is the leader and the founder of the Temple Institute. He was arrested not too long ago because he went on the Temple Mount, he started praying, and according to the law, like I said, you'd be arrested. You know what I'm saying? So that's why they can't do anything. They can't construct them. So what I'm saying is the Temple Mount, I mean the third temple that these Jews are talking about building, cannot be built unless this law be done away with, okay, or somehow be modified or something, or someone comes and you know, changes it up. You know what I'm saying? So, moving on. Okay, now, also, in 1967, the Israeli government allowed the Jordani Islamic Waqfa, I believe you say that right, which is a religious trust, to continue to administrate the Temple Mount complex. So, like I said, years earlier, the Muslims came in and conquered Jerusalem, built the Temple Mount. Built the Dome of the Rock. Okay? They built the Dome of the Rock, and from that time, it was always under guidance and control by this Islamic group. Okay? So, in 1967, they basically made the law basically saying that everybody's religions that are here now, you cannot offend them, you cannot do anything. So this is the situation. So, and then the Israeli government put another law saying that the Islamic group that was controlling the Temple Mount, which was the Islamic group, they would continue to. So this is another bracket law that is in the whole construct of the law that protects the holy sites, which is a law. Okay, so that's why they can't pray or worship on the Temple Mount, because of these two laws and these two stipulations. So now, this gets interesting, because now when we travel back to the scriptures, we travel back to Daniel 9:27, and it says, "And he shall confirm a covenant with many for 1 week." So for 7 years, he, being most likely, a.k.a. the anti-Messiah, a.k.a. possibly the best candidate, Maitreya, coming and confirming a covenant with many for 1 week. So this is what we must watch. Yahuwah just cleared the Air Force, cleared the Space Force, so we can see this clearly. The anti-Messiah, he will have to come, and he will have to... number one, he will have to go into, the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs, the High Court Justice. He will have to go. He will have to meet with them. Not only with them, he would have to also meet with the Islamic group, the Waqfa. He will have to meet with them. He will have to annul. He will have to annul the law for the protection of the holy seas, and he will have to modify the protection of the law of the holy seas that was created in 1967 in order for the Temple Mount to be built. Now, what I'm saying is possibly now. This could happen. There's many different scenarios that could happen. You could have them somehow petitioning and try to, get it done, do some other kind of way. But this seems, according to Daniel 9:27, it says, "He shall confirm a covenant with many for 1 week." Now, remember, right now, the Jews cannot, in no way, even according to the law, in no way can they come up and they do sacrifices on the Temple Mount. That's the only way. Sacrifices cannot be official unless they're done on the altar at the same location as where it was done in ancient times. That's the only way it can be official. It can only be officially done on the Temple Mount there. So I mean, saying they wouldn't have to, technically they don't have to build the whole temple, but they have to have an altar in that same space of where the original offerings were done. So you got to understand this. And according to that blockade, that's what's preventing them, is this law. So what is the conclusion? That somebody has to come along and confirm a covenant with the Jews. confirm the covenant with the Jews, not only the Jews, but according to the law of 1967 with the Islamic group controlling the Temple Mount, that he has to confirm a covenant also with the Muslims. So that's why it says, and he shall confirm a covenant with many, because it's just not one group. He has to come and negotiate with the Muslims, and he has to come with the Ashkenazis, basically allowing the Jews in order to represent their worship back on the Temple Mount. And see, once that happens, once the Ashkenazi Jews are able to, I wouldn't even say worship, because they worship the wrong person, but they for them to come back and do what they, you know, whatever they do, want to do on the Temple Mount, this law has to be renewed and the covenant has to be created. And this covenant that's created will be for 7 years. So this is, I mean, this is amazing, that because I've been praying to just see this clearly. And Yahuwah showed it clearly, showed the laws that are in place in which everything is preventing these things from happening. And so the anti-Messiah is going to come along and basically create this covenant. He's going to make a covenant with the Muslims and the Jews in order for the Jews to come back and be able to, I'm going to say come back because they never were there, to be able to do whatever they do on the Temple Mount, to be able to sacrifice, to be able to slaughter, just like they did the recreation slaughter this past Passover, for them to be able to slaughter on the Temple Mount. So this is what we got to watch for. We got to watch for, you know, we got to watch for an individual who's going to do this, who's going to come, because once that happens, you're talking about the first seal of Revelations being broken. You're talking about the end of times basically playing out. And so in the video that they had, in which they were doing a recreation, they were chanting, you know, next year is going to be, you know, on the Temple Mount. So it could be a spirit at work within them that is works with the powers that be, that possibly that could happen in 2013, that they may be able to slaughter back on the Temple Mount if an individual comes and confirms a covenant allowing the laws of 1967 to be done away with. Now, it has been said that, you know, that Obama was trying to do some different things, but he hasn't done it. You know, Obama was trying to do some things, you know, to change the laws, and you know, but this hasn't it hasn't done it, because Daniel 9:27, and it says, and in the middle of the week he shall put an end to the slaughtering and the meal offering. Okay. Now, also, this is also important too, because sometimes prophecy is just so deep, you can never just measure it and just say one thing. So that he can also be the spirit of the anti-Messiah, because we know that, you know, according to Yohanan, it says there are many anti-Messiahs. You know, you heard the anti-Messiah coming, you know, there's many anti-Messiahs. So it could be that also the spirit of the anti-Messiah too will create these things and do these things, and he shall come and put an end to the slaughtering and the meal offering. So the slaughtering and the meal offering that they will be doing on the Temple Mount after this individual or the spirit confirms a covenant between the Jews and the Muslims, he will put an end to it. But I believe the second he is definitely an individual, you know, but I'm saying, it would be an individual that will put an end to the slaughtering and the meal offerings, because, you know, they basically, you know, we know that according to the scriptures that the anti-Messiah will stand in the temple proclaiming himself to be Elohim. Okay? So that second he is definitely individual. I believe first he is possibly individual too, but it could go twofold and also be the spirit. But the spirit of the anti-Messiah. But either way, he shall confirm a covenant. So that's big. That's big, because I always want to, you know, we've just been studying and we're trying to find out get to the bottom nitty gritty. And that's what the nitty gritty is, the situation you have there is the anti-Messiah, spirit of anti-Messiah, will have to come and confirm a covenant with the Ashkenazi Jews and the Muslims to annul and create something and ratify or somehow modify the laws of 1967 in which both of these parties can be pleased, and it will allow the Ashkenazi Jews to come on a temple mount and be able to do slaughtering on an altar, be able to do slaughterings and a meal offering. So basically, the point of the matter is, when you see this, when you see the Ashkenazi Jews being able to come on the Temple Mount and offer slaughterings and meal offerings on an altar, this is the beginning of Revelation. This is the beginning of the seals being broken. And I'm talking about they are pushing for this to happen in order to usher in, because they wanted, just like the guy that runs the Temple Mount, his whole mission is to prepare for the arrival of the Messiah, in which he wants to build a third temple. So we got to continue to watch this, because there could be possibly an announcement coming in the future in which they would try to get these things done by 2013, by Passover 2013. So if they get these things done and try to get these things done by Passover 2013, that's going to be going on. Hey, you listen to Poetic Energy Network Station. I'm Yahuwah Sai, and we're still on the way. Hey, the show is going into archives, so if you're listening right now, check it out on archives. Poetic Energy Network Station, on the way with Yahuwah Sai. Check it out. It's going in the archives right now. So if you're listening, you get cut off, just go back and listen to it, the remainder of the show. So we're moving on. So this is the situation that you have here. You have the Temple Institute, you have the Temple Mount Faithful. They're both pushing for these things to happen, and it's big. So you're talking about that these things can transpire, and we're going to keep digging. We're going to keep digging to find out, because now we know where to start at. Because everything overseas and everything is going to be talked in code, with these laws and everything, and we got to understand what's really going on. Because you're talking about we got to be able to, we're not in the darkness, so we got to be able to pinpoint when the end times have begun to start, like Revelations, to understand, okay, because remember Yahushua said, he said, when you see the abomination of desolation set up in a temple where it shouldn't be, he that reads, let the reader understand. So we have to know what's going on in order to understand, okay, hey, Daniel 9:27 just been fulfilled. The dude came and made a covenant with the Jews and the Muslims, ratifying 1967 law. So now the Jews coming back on there, they're doing slaughtering offices 3.5 years now. They're going to, we should know when to expect. We should know when to expect these things. And the prophecy of Daniel was big on that, because even the Yehudi in the time of Yahushua, they didn't understand Daniel 9. They didn't understand Daniel 9, chapter 9, because if they did, they would have known that he was the Messiah prophesied in that very chapter to come on the cult that very day he came. They would have understood that. And see, so that's why we got to understand what's going on. But anyway, we want to leave you with some good word. We want to go to Samuel. First Samuel. First Samuel 15:22. 1 Samuel 15:22. And see, this is what Yahuwah is showing, and this is why I didn't plan this to do it like this, but this is why how it's coming up like this. 1 Samuel 15:22, and it says, Shamuel said, "Does Yahuwah delight in ascending offerings and the slaughterings, as in obeying the voice of Yahuwah? Look, to obey is better than slaughterings, to heed is better than fattening of rams. I mean, that's on point that we're talking about just now, is that the Khazarians are so bent upon, you know, trying to take hold of the Torah and do these slaughterings on the altar at the Temple Mount. That's their whole, they're pushing these things and trying to do these things. But guess what? It says, does Yahuwah delight in ascending offerings and the slaughtering offerings, as in obeying the voice of Yahuwah? Yahuwah would rather us to obey than obey his voice and try to, impress him or try to impress others. You know, I was reading about, all he told him was to speak to the rock and the rock would spring forth water. But however, he struck the rock, not believing the word of Yahuwah, that all he had to do was speak to it, and that cost him from getting into the promised land. So this is what we got to understand is, hey, that it's just not about, you know, doing stuff and doing all these things. It's just about all Yahuwah desires from us is to obey his voice. And so that's what we got to just get into the mode of doing, is that, hey, it's not about if you can lead a million people to Yahushua, or it's not about if you can, you know, speak, you know, Hebrew fluently and do these different things. You know, it's about obeying his voice. Where you're at, what he's giving you with, you know, is to obey his voice. Every day we wake up, you know, we ask him, you know, to speak to us. You know, what are you saying, Yahuwah? You know, what can we do better? But that's the thing, is obey his voice, and also to obey his voice is to hear his word and to know his word, because we have to, his voice is also his word. So we look at the word, we become doers of the Torah, not just hearers, and he will bless us for that. So this is what's been going on. And you listen to Poetic Energy Network Station. I'm Yahuwah Sidon, and we're on the way. May Yahuwah bless you and keep you. May his face shine upon you. Hey, hope you had a good time. Hope you maybe got something out of it. And just I hope you have a blessed Sabbath. And may Yahuwah face shine upon you. We out of here. Shabbat shalom.